This is Radio Energy News.
And you are listening to EN4 News. The time is just a minute past four. My name is Owen Garner. And on today's programme, we will be looking at the whirlwind story that is Brexit.
It's not a last chance saloon because there's been so many last chance saloon meetings so far that it's not credible to call it like that.
Also, later on the show, we will be looking at the controversial suggestion of a snacking ban on public transport.
I think it's really difficult to police, and also it may lead to an unhealthy relationship around food.
And our final story will be about today's politics festival.
There's no optimism in the discussions, a lot of the discussions. There's repetition and there's just a frustration of no achievement, you know, not getting anywhere, not doing anything, of uncertainty.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson met his Irish counterpart Leo Varadkar for a top secret negotiation today. In a joint statement, said the meeting was detailed and constructive. Andrew MacDonald has more.
In a top-secret location in the northeast of England, an important Brexit meeting took place today. PM Boris Johnson and Irish Taoiseach Leo Varadkar locked heads, seeking grounds for compromise as the clock ticks towards a no-deal Brexit in just 3 weeks' time. After the talks, they announced a productive and detailed discussion, but a solution still seems difficult, with Johnson seeking concessions on the Irish backstop, something both Varadkar and the EU have made clear is not likely. Despite this, Business Minister Kwesi Kwarteng was optimistic about the chances of a new Brexit deal, speaking before the talks took place.
I'm still very hopeful that we can get a deal after all this conversation, after all this time. I'm very hopeful that we can get a deal. Now, I can't tell you that it's definitely going to happen or when it's going to happen or what have you, but I can say that there's really a strong will on both sides, I think, now to try and resolve this and get a deal so that we can leave the EU in an orderly way.
With a crucial EU summit coming next week, time is running out to strike a deal that satisfies both parties. EN4 News spoke to Le Monde's London correspondent Eric Albert about the importance of today's meeting and if this is the last chance saloon for a Brexit deal.
It's not a last chance saloon because there's been so many last chance saloon meetings so far that it's not credible to call it like that. It's an important one because if there is to be a deal, it will have to go through Dublin. So the negotiations are officially directly between London and Brussels. But of course, all the negotiations are around the Irish border, and therefore whatever Dublin says, Brussels will support. And so far, the support of Brussels and of all the European countries have been without fail for Dublin. So it will be the same. So any agreement will have to go through Dublin, and therefore it's an important meeting. But again, there will be more negotiations. At the end of this process, there will probably be some postponement and some delay. And we will talk again about last chance saloon probably in a few months' time.
So Johnson's made it clear that he's happy to push for no deal if there's not going to be a deal on his terms. In your view, are the EU also happy to let this happen, or do you think they will make concessions?
The EU does not want no deal. It's not in the EU interest to have a no deal. It's, of course, not in Britain's interest to have no deal. And the country that would suffer the most is Britain, even though some countries like France and the north of France especially would suffer as well. So the EU does not want no deal, but no deal is not a credible option on the table right now. As the EU knows, there is a British law passed by Parliament that forced whoever is the Prime Minister to ask for a delay by the 19th of October if there is no agreement by then. Therefore, you know, making some kind of threat of no deal is not really a credible threat right now.
Elsewhere, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn accused the Prime Minister of using the Queen's speech ceremony as a cynical stunt.
He's using the Queen to deliver a pre-election party political broadcast for the Conservative Party. Let me address him directly. Prime Minister, we can't trust you not to break the law because you've got form.
He also reiterated his plan to hold a second referendum between Remain and a Labour Brexit deal if he becomes Prime Minister after an election.
And if you would like any more information on the current Brexit situation, including the thoughts of Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, then head over to en4news.com. Now, today marks the 27th annual World Mental Health Day. This year's theme is mental health promotion and suicide prevention. Here's reporter Amy Spence.
Today marks the 27th annual World Mental Health Day. This year's theme is mental health promotion and suicide prevention, an issue close to Scotland's heart. In 2018, Scotland's suicide rates reached an all-time high, hitting 16.1 deaths per 100,000 people. It is also the leading cause of death for young people in the UK. With statistics as high as these, everyone has been affected by suicide in some way, whether directly or indirectly. Gordon Ruddiman recounted an experience he had with a client while working as a community worker.
She had obviously spoken quite a few times about her difficulties, so, and at one point it became quite critical. So I managed to bring her through to the hospital and sat with her for about 2 hours until she was seen by somebody. So I left her at that point, but a few days later I did discover that she had been discharged from 2 hours after I had left the hospital. But I did discover 2 weeks later that she had taken herself off to Edinburgh, booked into a B&B and had committed suicide. The way that sort of affected me was, the first one obviously was, I was really upset that she had taken her own life, and I really kind of mournful of that.
There are millions of stories like this one, and on days like this, it is important to share these experiences in order to remind others that they are not alone. All throughout Scotland today, there are a number of pop-up stands in place to raise awareness of this important issue. Olivia Fay is a coordinator at Edinburgh Nightline, an organisation who provide a confidential support service run by students for students. Olivia spoke to us about why she thinks today is so important.
I think days like today are really important because it's about breaking down the stigma and kind of having a visual awareness of mental health, and that it's completely okay not to be okay all of the time. It's really good for opening up conversations just about day-to-day well-being. It doesn't have to be a kind of big revelation, just kind of having conversations with your friends, with staff, about how you're feeling and how things are going.
And if you feel personally affected by these issues or think someone you know may be in need of help, Olivia thinks it's important to note the first step is sharing your problems.
I'd say that it's always best to open a conversation about it. If you're worried about a friend or concerned, it's so much better to have the awkward conversation and say, I've kind of noticed things are a bit different with you recently, what's up? It's more, it's better to go through that uncomfortableness rather than it to escalate and you to not be aware, because a problem shared is a problem halved. So yeah, just talking and being open and making sure that you've got someone that you can always go to if things are getting tough.
For more multimedia coverage on the Suicide Prevention Initiative on Mental Health Day, then check out all the latest content on en4news.com. Now, with the news from around the world, is Chris Lamb.
As Turkey's incursion into Kurdish territory in northeast Syria continues into its second day, tens of thousands flee their homes for safe refuge. Turkish President Erdogan has stated that since the operation began yesterday, more than 100 militants have been killed. However, the Kurdish Red Crescent claims that during the conflict, at least 7 civilians have also been killed, with 19 more critically injured. Turkish officials claim that the aim of the assault is to create a safe zone along the Turkish-Syrian border and clear the area of Kurdish militia forces, which Erdogan's government views as terrorist organization. US President Donald Trump has urged Turkey to act in as humane a way as possible.
We'll see. We'll see how he does it. He can do it in a soft manner, he could do it in a very tough manner, and if he does it unfairly, he's going to pay a very big economic price.
Meanwhile, during Turkey's offensive, 2 British Islamic State militants have been taken into custody by the US. The so-called IS Beatles, El Shafi El Sheikh and Alexander Kote, have previously been held captive by Kurdish militia forces in northern Syria. The pair are accused of being involved in the film beheadings of 2 British aid workers and 2 American journalists. US officials claim the 2 are now being held in a secure location amid fears that Turkey's offensive on northeast Syria could lead to the militants being freed. The US diplomat's wife, suspected of being involved in the fatal road collision that killed 19-year-old Harry Dunn, will not be returned to the UK for trial, according to leaked briefing notes. The contents of the notes were revealed yesterday after they were caught on camera following a meeting between Donald Trump and Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab. In a phone call yesterday, Prime Minister Boris Johnson asked Mr. Trump to waive the diplomatic immunity for Anne Sekulis, but now Harry's mum, Charlotte Charles, says she sees no point in further calls to the US president.
I don't see the point in President Trump even taking a call from Boris Johnson if he'd already made his decision that if it were to be asked and if it were to be raised, the answer was already going to be no. It's just beyond any realm of any human thinking.
The Bank of England has today revealed its new design of the £20 note with updated security features. The new design, which comes into circulation early next year, will also feature a self-portrait of the artist J.M.W. Turner.
The Nobel Prize in Literature for 2018 is awarded to the Polish author Olga Tokarczuk. The Nobel Prize in Literature for 2019 is awarded to the Austrian author Peter Handke.
Polish novelist Olga Tokarczuk and Austrian writer Peter Handke have been announced as the winners of the Nobel Prize in Literature for 2018 and 2019, respectively, in Stockholm today. The Swedish Academy cited Tokarczuk's work for its narrative imagination that represents the crossing of boundaries as a form of life. On Handke's work, the Academy stated that with linguistic ingenuity, he has explored the periphery and the specificity of the human experience. The announcement comes after a year hiatus for the prestigious award following sex abuse allegations within the Swedish Academy's Nobel Committee.
And CMO Dame Sally Davis has set out a number of ways to combat obesity in recent report, including a proposed ban on snacking when on public transport. We spoke to Dr. Tortia from NutriPanda earlier today about the ban, and here's what he had to say.
Actually, I don't agree about this policy that has been promoted about the snacking ban issues. The reason is, first of all, because it's been quite evident in a review in 2013, published also from the University of Minnesota, that snacking is not increasing obesity. And so there is no evidence, scientific evidence, that they can confirm that snacking can increase the overweight. And therefore, I believe that absolutely is unnecessary banning the snacking to tackle childhood obesity.
So in terms of is this realistic or not, do you think that this ban is something that could be implemented in the future?
I don't think so, because how do you identify which kind of snack is healthy and unhealthy? How do you know the percentage of free sugar on a snack? Realistically, it's impossible, because if you travel for a journey and you travel on a train and you have 2-3 hours, how do you know that the orange juice that you're drinking doesn't contain right amount of sugar, free sugar, so the calorie contents? So you can't really create a ban on snacking, because it's impossible for the commuters and for everyone to understand exactly which snack is healthy or is unhealthy.
We also spoke to Dr. Laura Wins, an independent nutritionist, and here is what she had to say.
It's getting to quite a crisis point, because, I mean, look at type 2 diabetes, for example. Until recently, type 2 diabetes was considered an adult-only disease. But it was in 2000, I think, the first cases in children, type 2 diabetes in children were reported. And now there's over 100 new cases each year.
For what was a clearly divisive issue, our reporter Joe Woods went to the street to find out what people had to say.
I see where they're going. Like, I see their reasoning. It can be annoying for the cleaning.
There's an agreement and a disagreement on that proposal, because when you're in a bus or public transport, people come in with cooked food, which is smelling at a takeaway.
Yeah.
I find that off-putting.
Yeah.
So that's one point. The other point is, if someone wants to snack, they must obey the rules and clean up after them.
Of course.
Not leave the rubbish about.
I think it's reasonable to ban it because people leave an awful mess when they snack and they're only on the bus for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's enforceable because the driver's only one person.
I feel like it'd be quite hard to like enforce on like buses and trains, having people like patrolling or whatever. I don't know if that would work very well. I feel like it's a good idea.
Yeah, but like, what would be more realistic, I think, if they actually stopped serving, like on trains, they stopped serving chocolate rather than actually stopping people bringing on the chocolate and stuff, because you can't search someone's bag before you go on a train. It's kind of unrealistic and a bit of a waste of money to make someone have that as their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a good idea, but I don't know if it would actually work.
YouTube have shut down thousands of channels that style themselves as pickup artists this week. The videos involve men walking the streets and approaching women with pickup lines to make sexual advances. Here with the full story is Rory Gilmore.
The YouTube ban comes after they deemed the channels to be in breach of their terms of service, citing it under sexual content. The video sharing website released a statement. YouTube strictly prohibits explicit sexual, graphic or harassing content. Nothing is more important than protecting the safety of our community, and we will continue to review and refine our policies in this area. Two accounts have been banned in Scotland this week after a Panorama investigation highlighted the harassing nature of the videos. One man, 38-year-old Adnan Ahmed, who appears in the investigation, is due to be sentenced after being convicted of threatening and abusive behaviour that he filmed for his YouTube channel. The youngest person to complain about his behaviour is only 17. Another shocking discovery of the investigation was a so-called seduction boot camp that men, desperate for sex, would pay £1,500 for tips to get women into bed with them. The nature of the videos made in Scotland are shocking. Filming women sleeping after sex and using incredibly derogatory language towards people was commonplace on the two Scottish-based channels.
The question was that we do game far more than just pussy is just icing on the cock.
We took to the streets of Edinburgh to hear the experiences women have had with male sexual harassment.
Yes, I have been catcalled numerous times, no matter who I'm with, like my mum or my friends or anyone in the street. It's worse at night. I can't go for a run at night because I'll feel like I'll get harassed. I think the focus should be less on women covering up and not going out at night, etc., and be more on men teaching them and socialising them to know that that is like not okay behaviour. Just be more respectful of women and see them less as sexual beings and more as equals in terms of intelligence and physicality.
Pretty often, to be honest, like mostly at night, but it happens during the day as well. And it's, if I'm with like a big group of my friends and we're all girls, like it happens a lot more so, more than if I'm on my own.
Yeah, I have experienced this kind of behaviour. It tends to happen more at night. Like when you're going out, you've got your nice outfit on and stuff, walking through the town. Happens a lot when you get people honking their horns at you, calling out of their cars. But it also happens inside the club. I've had quite a few occasions where I've been groped without obviously wanting that to happen, and I've tried to turn away to stop them from doing it, but they still find a way.
Although the type of harassment that is taking place on YouTube is unusual for Scotland, reported incidents of sexual harassment are up by 6% from last year, and serious sexual assaults are up by 8%. Sandy Brindley, CEO of Rape Crisis Scotland, expressed her concern at the popularity of these videos.
I think it's really worrying. I think it's the exact opposite message that we want to get out. I mean, the message, I think, wouldn't you be getting out to people is about the importance of consent and healthy sexual relationships and mutuality. And instead, really, I think what these videos do is dehumanise women, treat us as objects. And really, I think, basically, difficult questions or concerning questions about consent. I mean, how genuine can consent be when somebody's part of a game and they don't know that the game is actually existing?
She also spoke about the help that is out there currently for women who are subjected to the sexual harassment in these videos.
It can be incredibly distressing to realise the images of you have been taken without your consent and shared on a site like YouTube. We run a helpline that's on every night from 6 p.m. till midnight for anyone affected by any issue in terms of sexual violence, which includes this issue. People can phone us for information, help and support, but we can also help people liaise with the police, for example, because this is a criminal offence, it's a serious criminal offence. And we can help people engage with the police and try and ensure the police take their complaints seriously.
Sexual harassment is clearly a growing issue in Scotland. Although there are positive steps being made by private entities and charities like Rape Crisis Scotland and YouTube to deplatform the accounts, there must be more of a push from governments and local councils to tackle what seems to be a deep-rooted problem.
Rory Gilmore there with a report on so-called pickup artists. But now we return to Chris Lamb for the local news.
Health Secretary Jean Freeman has today been accused of backtracking on her pledge to carry out an urgent inspection of the capital's existing Sick Kids Hospital to make sure the premises and the equipment are up to scratch. In a statement sent to EM4 News, Tory MSP Miles Briggs said the SNP has totally failed to get on top of this plagued building project, and at this rate it doesn't look like it will be open anytime soon. In a letter responding to the Conservative Health spokesman, she said she had met staff who had raised concerns regarding the appropriateness and timing of such an inspection. It was revealed that the hospital, which has over 2,000 snagging issues, such as issues with the ventilation system, will remain unusable until the autumn of next year. Figures released today show hundreds of reports of falling masonry from Edinburgh's crumbling tenements in the past year. Figures released under Freedom of Information laws show people reported 179 cases of falling masonry last year. The report also says the number has dramatically risen in the last decade, with over 1,000 reported incidents since 2008. Of those, one in three posed a risk to public health and safety, needing work to make the building safe. Callum McCready, an Edinburgh-based stonemason, told EM4 News,
"In my opinion, with many years in the trade, this is a serious concern for public safety and the architectures and structures of Edinburgh City. The problems with the buildings is only going to get worse and worse with the Scottish weather corroding the stone."
A stalker who torched a woman's 13th floor flat was given a life sentence at the High Court today. Sean Roberts was handed an order for lifelong restriction, which is a sentence imposing a prison term that isn't determined during sentencing, and an electric tag for the rest of the convict's life. The 34-year-old had earlier subjected one woman to a four-month campaign of stalking, at one stage threatening to set fire to her home, and made threats against two other women. An Edinburgh school has announced controversial plans to ban students from dressing up this Halloween. Parents at St. David's Roman Catholic Primary School in Grattan were told the parent council has decided to disallow the children dressing up on Halloween in order to promote inclusivity within the school. The school in the north of the city shares a dining hall with non-denominational Pernhill School, whose pupils will be allowed to dress up. MSPs are currently voting on a workplace parking levy. The proposal, which is part of a series of proposals included in a new transport bill, aims to gain around £9 million per year for the transport improvements. A similar scheme in Nottingham already exists. However, businesses are not footing the bill in 80% of the cases, instead passing on the levy to staff.
And now for sport with Josh McConnellock.
Scotland's crucial World Cup game against Japan may be cancelled due to Typhoon Hagibis. Cancellation of the game would see both teams receive 2 points, which would be enough alone to see Scotland through to the quarterfinals. However, with no chance of a bonus point for the Scots, a win against Samoa on Sunday would be enough to send Pool A competitors Ireland through to the next round of the tournament. Scotland will have to wait until Sunday to find out the fate of their game, with the game between France and England having already been cancelled. Head of the Rugby World Cup, Alan Gilpin, has said the decision has not been taken lightly.
"As you can imagine, the decision to cancel these matches has not been taken lightly and has been made with the best interests of team, public, tournament and volunteer safety as a priority."
To club rugby next. Edinburgh Rugby will take on Leinster in this Friday's Guinness Pro 14 clash. With a win last time out against Cardiff Blues, confidence will be high for the Edinburgh camp. However, coach Richard Cockerill isn't taking the current holders lightly.
"They've got some very good players. They've got some real experience in key areas. You know, both second rows are very experienced. and 9 and 10 are very handy players as well, and they've got some experience with the spine of that team. So I think defence is important every time we play. If you let Leinster get on the front foot and control the tempo of the game, they're going to cause problems, and we hope that we're going to put up a bit more of a fight than Ospreys did.
To football now. Scotland take on Russia tonight in a Euro 2020 qualifier. Failure to win in Moscow would see the door all but closed for Scotland's qualifications hopes. Scotland are currently 9 points from qualification in Group A. However, the Scots are guaranteed a playoff place next March thanks to the UEFA Nations League. To local sports next. Hibernian ladies will take on Motherwell at home in a semi-final of the Scottish Women's Football Cup on Sunday. The Edinburgh-based side will be hopeful after the two teams' last encounter ended a 2-0 win for Hibs. However, Hibernian's head coach Grant Scott is wary of the away side.
Even on that day, they were a bit more defensive than I expected. But they posed a threat going forward. You know, they've got a couple of young, energetic strikers with a bit of pace and stuff. So, you know, we almost got caught a couple of times on the, not quite on the counter-attack. That's probably been a bit unfair to Motherwell on that day. But, you know, similar affair, I would imagine, at the weekend where they'll look to stay in the game and try and catch us out with a fast break or two.
EN4 News will keep you up to date with all the latest developments in the top sports stories of the day. And finally, with the Festival of Politics starting tonight at the Scottish Parliament, our events reporter Adam Zavatsky investigates political engagement in Scotland.
2019 marks the 20th anniversary of devolution, and since then a lot has happened in the Parliament's short lifetime. While the Parliament's voting system means the Scottish people are represented by more political parties than ever before, the independence referendum of 2014 engaged more people in politics than ever before. The introduction of a devolved parliament in 1999 has also made it easier for the Scottish people to have their voices heard on local and national issues. Kim Harding, one of the founders of Pedal in Parliament, said that from a campaign perspective, access to politicians has improved engagement.
It's much easier to lobby locally and to engage with politicians. We found when we first started the campaign that we were able to get direct access to the Transport Minister.
He also thought that the level of accountability was much higher by having a devolved parliament.
It certainly made democracy more accessible to the Scottish people. Things like when they set up a Scottish parliament, you can petition the parliament, even before Westminster had it. So when we first set up the campaign, we organised a petition, which we decided to send to the Parliament. And we contacted them and said, well, how many signatures do we need before you'll accept our petition? And they said, one. You can petition Parliaments with a single signature, and if it's considered to be of value, they will debate it in the Chamber.
Speaking from the City Chambers, Cameron Rose, Conservative councillor for Southside and Newington, believes that the political discourse surrounding Brexit is having a negative effect on engagement among the populace.
There is a large number of people who I have spoken to who just find themselves really frustrated and turned off, don't want to listen to the news, don't want to listen to it again, because, and this is my commentary, there's no optimism in the discussions, a lot of the discussions. There's repetition and there's just a frustration of no achievement, you know, not getting anywhere, not doing anything, of uncertainty.
He went on to say that while devolution has localised political decision-making, engaging the public, there has also been confusion regarding its power.
I do think things are a little bit more local and in your face because we now have a Holyrood Parliament. It's another layer which creates issues in terms of costs, but it does make things more local. And I think people are more engaged in a sense with their local MSPs, but it does mean there's another level and there's some confusion as to who the real power holders are in particular areas. What is local government? What is Scottish government? What is Westminster government? You know, who deals with what?
But what did the people think? I accosted members of the public in my usual inquisitorial style to find out.
The whole Brexit situation, does that turn you on to politics or turn you off?
Oh, definitely turn me on to politics. Especially, like, most of my friends are from, like, Europe and stuff. So it's important for me to know that they're going to be okay with Brexit happening and everything. And I feel like it's important to keep focused on Brexit in general.
Definitely. It made me much more active just because it's a whole mess. It's a whole, and I just love looking at it, and then I laugh and then I cry.
It just makes me angry.
How do you think social media has changed, or if it has changed, the way that people have been able to engage in politics, the politicians?
I feel like it allows us to, especially like with Twitter and stuff, it allows us to communicate better with politicians and be able to talk with large groups of people about politics and what's going on in Scotland. And I feel like it also gives opportunities for people to advertise more about politics, so people hear about it more often. I feel like I wouldn't know a lot about politics if I wasn't online as much, so I feel like, especially with younger generations, it's a good way of involving them more in politics.
I don't know, it's changed the way that I engage with politics, because I think it's changed the way that politicians engage with people. You know, they're much more active, and it's this sort of social media trying to become more and more likeable. It used to be they just had to go on BBC and, like, you know, kiss a baby and pet a dog or something like that, but now it's they have to keep up appearances at all times. They've got their publicist who's, you know, messaging people and trying to interact, and sometimes it just goes horribly wrong, which is actually most of the time.
And that's about all we've got time for today, but we leave you with news that one lucky UK ticket holder has won a whopping £170 million on the UK lottery, which is more than Adele, Sir Tom Jones and Ed Sheeran's wealth combined. It's all right for some. But until next time, have a good evening.
This is Radio Energy. Edinburgh Napier Radio Group. Talk, tunes, tales and talent. From Edinburgh to you.